Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by an extraordinary leader whose work spans entrepreneurship, investment, global events, and advocacy for meaningful inclusion. Paul Segoo, OBE, is the founder of the Asian Awards and a visionary behind multiple international platforms that celebrate excellence across business, science, art, and philanthropy. He advises organizations globally on growth, strategy, and transformation, and has been recognized with an OBE for services to diversity and inclusion. Paul, it is a real pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you so much. And as always, really appreciate being with you as well.
Thank you so much. Now, Paul, your career spans from investment, events, media, and consultancy. Looking back, what first drew you into building platforms that bring people together?
I think what's really interesting about doing events is, unless you work for an undertaker, most events are about celebration of some sort. People put on an event to share good news, to celebrate momentous occasions, to celebrate others, to celebrate religion, religious festivals, etc. So there tends to be a huge modicum of happiness. And that's a really nice environment to be around. And when you start to get into events that, really touch people's lives, be the people who are, let's say, being celebrated or the people who are attending, you start to, get into a quite a strong emotional state, which is very rewarding. I've done events where financially they haven't been great, but the reward of how people feel when they come up to you afterwards and they say, "Wow, you know what? I had such a good time. I'm going to change my life. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to take some form of action." That's reward enough, man. And that's like a That's quite a rare thing to do with your time, and to be able to feel that way after, having worked really hard on something, and perhaps monetarily not be be your reward, to accept that. I think that's quite a beautiful thing. So for me, it's a wonderful thing to be doing. And just thinking out aloud, as long as people like the idea of seeing each other, it's quite AI proof as well. So I'm kind of
Yes.
glad of that as well.
No, that's beautiful, Paul, and I really appreciate the way you articulated that because it reminds us that events aren't just logistics or business models, they're emotional spaces. And when people leave feeling inspired, uplifted, or ready to take action in their own lives, that's impact you simply can't measure on a balance sheet. And I think it says a lot about you that the real reward isn't just financial, it's the transformation you see in the room. And I've been in those rooms, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I leave inspired, and I know there were many occasions when I did attend the Asian Awards, and I know that you founded the Asian Awards in 2009. But what gap did you see at the time that made you feel this was
Right.
necessary?
Well, I had in the year prior, I had exited my IT company. So not a lot of people know. Well, I think by now people do know it who follow me. But I'd exited an IT company. I sold it to an Indian company, and it did the whole now what? And you're looking back. You're 15, 16 years ago. The idea of you can transition from one thing to the next was a lot tougher then than it is now. Now there's a million ideas. It's just about execution. Whereas in those days, the ideas were few and far between, and the execution was less expeditious than it is today. You can, especially with AI, you can do so much execution so quickly. So I started, but I started attending. I met some really good people in the Asian space, and I wasn't in the Asian space previously, but I met some people. They started inviting me to certain events and this, that, the other, and I started to feel that There's a lot of events that, were celebrating Asian people, but they were quite lackluster. And if they weren't lackluster, there were things wrong with them. Perhaps the way they were organized wasn't great. The winner choice of winners, the rationale behind the choice of winners perhaps wasn't great. And it didn't frustrate me, but it made me feel like we can do better. It made me feel like there's a way in which if the goal is to inspire and to reward, then the way we're going about it isn't great. And we could probably do it better. Now, given the fact that I didn't have an events background, there was a learning curve for me to go through to figure out what is it that we need to do and who do I need to work with and logistically, how do I make this work? But before I did any of that, what I really was interested in is understanding what do I want my audience to feel when people watch Sachin Tendulkar winning an award in a UK audio from a UK audience. What do I want them to feel? What is the resonance that I want the diaspora, Western people who barely know much about Sachin's history and who he was and all this, that, the other? What do I want them to feel? And those were the guidances that I took. Those were the levers that I pulled upon in order to develop what I ended up developing. And that's kind of how I got into it. And I guess there was encouragement from people when they started to learn, we were putting out press releases saying XYZ is turning up, this person's turning up, that person's turning up, the prime minister's involved. It sort of started, people started going, wow, is this real? Is this nonsense? Are you really doing this? And I was like, yeah. And then you start to get the encouragement, and the encouragement that came from that, again, was positive levers that I'm doing the right thing. And I think this is a platform that could move people.
Going back to what you were saying, it's really insightful, Paul, and I appreciate how honest you're being about the transition period, that now what moment, and after such a big exit. What I really appreciate and what I find really powerful is the emotion behind everything, and I really like that. The fact that you started by asking how you want people to feel rather than just how to organize it. And that says a lot, again, about you. It's not just about giving someone an award, it's about creating pride, connection, and that understanding in the room as well. Because when you think about the emotion first, everything else makes more sense. And that's what makes an event memorable rather than just another night out. And I feel that's really important. And I think when you feel that kind of pull, that sense that this platform can genuinely move people, it gives you the confidence to keep building. And recognition and visibility matter. And as you keep building, of course, that aspect improves as well. Why do you think celebrating excellence can be such a powerful driver of confidence and progress?
I mean, you need to look into the central core of being a human to answer that question. If you went to the average person and you said, do you want fame or do you want 1 million quid? After you give, most people go, oh, give us 1 million quid. After you've given the 1 million quid, they would go, oh, I should have taken the fame. And that's because recognition for what one does and recognition for who one is tends to sit higher on the food chain than just financial reward. And we see that across. I mean, the BAFTAs was on yesterday. The Oscars is on very fairly soon. What are they all about? The movie's done. It's happened. They've earned their money. Why is it important to now say you did a good job? Why do they care? If their movie grossed $1 billion and one of the key actors has walked away with 100 million, or the direct producers walked away with 100 million, why do they care? Well, because the pinnacle is the recognition. The pinnacle is not the financial reward. The pinnacle is the recognition. The pinnacle is being associated with something great. And to be told that you are good in your game or great in your game, in our case, to be told that you are worthy, to be told that you stand above head and shoulders your peers, and you are recognized by your peers. That is the driving force. And that's a driving force in many things. And we know this because we're taught this as at a young age with the grading system of schools, that, you know, if someone gets a C, they still pass. But if someone gets an A, it's amazing. And do we laud the person who got the C? No, we laud the person who got the A. But the net result is the same. They both passed. But we say this person did better at it. This person was better. But they still came out with the same qualification, but just at a different grade. And if you think about that, that's something that's built into us, certainly in the Western world. I think it's perhaps a tad different in certain parts of the world, let's say like Africa and this, that, the other, where some people just care about achievement in terms of survival rather than achievement in terms of recognition.
Yes.
But almost certainly it's a very prevalent thing in the Western world, and of course in some prominent Asian geographies as well. So I think that's what you've got to look at. That is the rationale behind why it's important. Because I think it's part of who we are as people. You know, if you were taken for granted for everything that you did, even though you were rewarded for it, you would hate your life. If you just got paid for your job, a fair sum, and no one ever said to you, good job, you would ultimately go through some kind of depression with that job. You would feel like, oh, no one ever says I do a good job. Well, you're getting paid. Why do you care? Well, that's not the point. Point is, I want to be told that I'm actually good at it, or that I'm, that what I'm doing is of value, even though you're getting paid. So you, when you think of that psychology, that is the psychology that gets tapped into with respect to award ceremonies and general recognition and everything like that. And it's not a competition, because remember, this is not something, it's not like an athlete, you know, winning, pitting them and one athlete against the other, no matter what the sport. No, that's their job. That is their job. If this is about recognizing them outside of that. This is about recognizing for that, but outside of their job. It's not part of their job. And that's what makes it extra special. That's what makes it, you know, greater. It's like when footballers get the Ballon d'Or and, you know, they get these amazing awards. There you go, wow, that's the most important thing for me. Yeah, but you just won the World Cup. Yeah, but no, this is more important. You know, so you realize that recognition hits home and hits home hard.
Yeah, and that's such an important distinction, Paul, competing and winning in their job. That's what they train for and get paid to do. But being recognized beyond that, outside the rules of the game, feels different. It acknowledges the person, not just the performance, which is really important. And I think that's what makes it so special. Many of those events that you talk about, and you spoke about different cultures practicing different things, but many organizations talk about diversity and inclusion. From your perspective, what does meaningful inclusion actually look like in practice?
I think the important thing to state here is, what is the difference between diversity and inclusion? Because they are two, it's kind of wrong that people have just stuck them together, because one can be quite, diversity can be quite damaging. Let me give you an example. Let's say let's take the workplace. Let's say you have a top team, and the top team has five men, all white. And someone comes along, a DEI expert comes along and goes, oh, you know what? And the company's doing well and it's fine. And someone comes along and goes, oh, you've got five white guys at the top. Do you know that doesn't look good? Where's the women? Where's the people of color? And then some bright spark in HR decides to go, oh, we need to hire someone. But, you know, we can't obviously look for someone who's a woman or of color, but we will encourage applications from that. And if someone comes along, then, you know, we'll take them on. Now, what if, and this is tends to happen a lot, which is why you get this backlash for positive discrimination, is you end up getting into a situation where someone is hired, they're okay at the job, but they're mostly hired because they fulfill one or two of these other criteria. And what can happen, and what has happened certainly in industry and certainly in the creative space, is that they end up not having done a great job because they weren't hired for the primary reason, which is, are you good at your job, yes or no? They were hired for a secondary reason first, and the job part was maybe the tertiary or the secondary or tertiary reason why they were hired, which is not the point of hiring. And then they end up making mistakes or there's issues. And what happens is that person either leaves or gets let go, in correct circumstances, they weren't good at their job, they made a mistake or whatever. And from that point onwards, those same companies turn around and go, never doing that again. Never doing that again. That was such a bad idea. We tried to shoehorn someone in, and it was a bad idea. Now, I've just given these, I want people to understand this is an example. There are multiple examples where, certainly if you look at the tech world, look at the finance world, where having people of color is insanely good. But that's primarily, again, because they're good at what they do. The color just happens to be different. And that's how I view recognition and purpose-driven movements, where the purpose is primary to the business. Same with movies, when they talk about, oh, we should have a black James Bond. But why? I mean, you're trying to be diverse. For what purpose? There was nothing wrong with the previous James Bond. There was nothing wrong with that. Bring in a new character. Don't change the original words of Ian Fleming. Don't change the original idea of what was created just because you want to try and shoehorn something in. Because if it comes out to be wrong, or let's say the movie turns out to be terrible, or they release James Bond as a female, wow. You,
Yeah.
you, you're gonna, you're gonna, you're gonna, people are gonna end up going, well, that was a total waste of time. And then they're gonna struggle to get the whole franchise back on again because they go, the last one was crap. I'm never gonna watch it ever again. You can do a lot of damage by doing that. But what's the right thing to do? The right thing is to be inclusive. Now, what does inclusive mean? Inclusive means is you are, you're, there's no barrier to entry for anybody. Everybody is welcome to apply. Everybody is welcome to take part. Everybody is welcome to do things. You don't put a barrier. You encourage people from every part of every aspect of every dynamism, be that sexual orientation, race, religion, wealth, poverty, doesn't matter. And that just allows the cream to rise to the top. Because when you do that, what you're saying is you're all welcome. And guess what? We're blinded by whatever you are. Whatever your background is, whomever you are, and all we care about is that the cream rises to the top. The best of the best, whatever that those attributes are, will be the person who we hire, or the person who will work with us, or the person who will showcase, or the person who will get the gig, or whatever it is. And that, I think, is more important. I think if you look at the UK, one of the biggest reasons why we have this far right issue is because diversity is completely broken in the UK. We're trying to shoehorn things to say, oh, but they need, no, they don't need their section. If their section, if by encouraging certain behaviors from certain groups of certain people, you're damaging the rest, why is that good? Why is that a good scenario? It's not a good scenario. And I'm a person of color myself, and I see that those scenarios are damaging. Why would you damage that scenario? You're supposed to create harmonious attributes, harmonious endeavors, harmonious behaviors. You don't need to force feed things on people. And so I think you need to almost say, do your thing, but don't expect us to do our thing with you. And that's okay. When you have dinner in your home, do you expect everyone on your street to eat the same food as you? No. Do you expect everyone on your street to watch the same program as you? No. But everybody will experience the same weather. So there are some things that are already under everyone's umbrella. There are some things that make us all connected in any case. It doesn't necessarily need to transpose to every single facet of our lives. Religion, sexual orientation, food, culture, this, that, celebrations. No, we can do our own thing without it impeaching and imposing on others. And I think where diversity breaks is when you start to try and shoehorn and force people to do things and force people to rec accept. You don't. I mean, One of the best examples I can give you is the idea of sexual orientation. If someone comes up to me and they're, a transsexual, and they expect me to acknowledge their sexuality's got nothing to do with me. Unless I am sleeping with them, what they do in between the sheets with them and their partners, it's got nothing to do with them. It's none of my business. So who they are in that department has got nothing to do with me. If I'm talking to them about something that requires them to think on a level of, are they skilled at something scientific or this, what has that got to do with their gender? Nothing. What has that got to do with their sexuality? Nothing. What has that got to do with their race? Nothing. So why is it important that I have to acknowledge it? It's not. All I have to acknowledge is their ability. You start to see when people start to force feed, and the force feeding tends to come more so from the minorities. South Asian minorities have force fed things onto people, onto the Western people in the UK, for example, and they've not liked it. And I totally resonate with that. I totally understand it because it's not important. It's not important. Living and let living and being inclusive and allowing people to just get on is saying, I'll do my thing and you do your thing. We don't need to share, but I have nothing against what you do, and you should have nothing against what I do. But I'm certainly not going to be imposing. I'm certainly not going to ask you to co-celebrate my thing with me. If you choose to, great. But if you don't want to, that's not a bad thing. That doesn't make you a bad person. That just makes you aligned with what you're naturally aligned to. And I think that's such an important issue that people are so scared of putting out. They're so scared of, they think, oh, I'm going to offend people. No, you're not. You're not going to offend someone.
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for sharing such with such passion and honesty, because I hear how strongly you feel about that, Paul. And I think what you're really speaking about is the importance of balance and fairness. And for me, the goal has to be harmony, creating shared spaces where we respect differences, but also focus on what connects us, like shared values, shared contribution, and mutual respect. And that's where real cohesion comes from, I think, not from force, but from trust and fairness. So thank you so far, Paul, for your valuable insight. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
The station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and I am joined by the amazing Paul Segoo, OBE. Now, before the break, we were discussing what meaningful inclusion looks like in practice. Welcome back, Paul.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me again.
Now, Paul, you've worked across different sectors and cultures. How has that shaped the way you approach leadership and decision making?
I think if you were to look at the base concept of what is leadership, and you know, there's so many, you know, posters and memes and stories and ideals, and you know, leadership is about inspiring. I would say first and foremost, you can pay someone to do something. And you say, look, I need you to pick this block up from A to B. And they go, okay. Or you can inspire them to do it. And they say, well, what are you going to do afterwards? Where does it go? And you go, well, it goes to C. And they go, well, why don't you let me do that? That's a great analogy of the difference between someone who is being a director in a business, or being someone who is just directing someone to just go to do the A to B, or someone who's genuinely inspiring and leading, is you allow people to use their own initiative. You bring out initiatives from people. And I tend to find that whatever I've done in life, where I feel it's so important is when people naturally feel like they want to go above and beyond. You know, I ask them for something and they'll go, Paul, you know what? I'm going to go all out, mate. I'm going to do this for you. You know, you ask for this, but you know what? I really want to go and do this for you. I want to go all out. I'd like to do this. And I think that is real leadership. That for me is what leadership is about. And it's not least when things are going wrong, as things are going right. It's when things are going wrong as well. Mm-hmm. It's how many people will stick by you when things are going wrong, and things often do go wrong, as we all know. It's not all a smooth sailing. There are plenty of times when things won't work out, and you don't want people to then turn around and leave you and say, well, it's a sinking ship, I'm off. You want people to feel still inspired and understand through your leadership and your open honesty why things have gone wrong, and they still choose to stay with you. They still choose to support you. That is another facet of positive leadership. And you see that. You see that a lot in corporates. You see that a lot in... You used to see that a lot more. I think now people have become just intrinsically a lot more selfish. And we know that because, you know, anyone older than 40 will know that the jobs of yesteryear used to be decades long. And now they're max 5 years. You know, unless you've got golden handcuffs, most jobs, most people just springboard 2-3 years, 4 years, 5 years and springboard off. And that's largely because we've kind of generically lost that ability and things have become far more transactional. But, you know, the principle is the same.
And I love that explanation, Paul. And because you've made it very practical, there's a big difference between managing tasks and inspiring people. Anyone can actually instruct someone to go from A to B, but real leadership makes them care about what happens at C. And I love the way that you said, you know, people have to really be there, the good times and the bad. And when people feel ownership, when they naturally want to go above and beyond without being asked, that's not compliance, that's commitment. And when people
understand, it's very easy to be happy when everything's going well, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a really important point. And you advise companies globally with a hands-on approach. What qualities do you believe leaders need most in an uncertain world? So when things are going wrong, what advice would you give them?
I mean, I think this is a very lesson of now, especially with what's going on in the media and all sorts that we've seen in the last few years. And that is, to be honest, a lot of people are afraid of telling the truth. And I think, you know, you think about our prime minister, you think about leaders at that level, at the political level, at the CEO level, you know, people who work in entertainment and media, so much dishonesty. And you know, that level of dishonesty just cuts people off in a second. You know, it tarnishes you for life, you know, that level of dishonesty. And what people who've been honest and put their hands up and say, look, I made a mistake, I did this, I did that. You know, yes, you get wrapped around the knuckles for a few years, but by and large, most of these people bounce back, because people then go, you know what, they've paid their dues. You know, they've accepted where they've gone wrong. They've accepted, you know, their responsibility in what went wrong. And now they deserve a chance, because nobody should be kept down forever. But when people lie, the betrayal is so strong that people tend not to forget. And of course, that sticks with you. And I think the one thing that I would say the best advice to leaders is, if something is going awry, tell people, and tell people quickly. They can handle it. They can handle it better than you assume them to be. And if that evokes a mass exodus, then that's the way in which you've communicated it. And if you say something like, oh, I don't know, let's just say you work in an IT company and you just lost a big order, and you as the CEO is the first person to hear that you just lost this big order, and it means a whole load of people are going to have to be laid off. Why would you let those rumors start to circulate and percolate, and people start to get their own opinions? And then when they are senior manager, oh no, it's all fine. Why would you create a culture of denial? Why wouldn't you just say, look, guys, with the best of all our intentions, we tried to save this, it hasn't happened, and now we're in trouble. Can anyone come up with some inspiring ideas? You know, we think we could go this way, but if you've got a better idea, tell me, we're going to talk to each. Look how much you could possibly save. Look how much what you could probably do. And we really do live in a culture of, and certainly we've seen it in the last 5 years, so much lying from all these people. They say one thing, do something else, promise one thing, deliver something else. Yes. And it's devastating to how people are behaving. I mean, if you look at the feelings of you know, citizens in the UK towards politicians, I mean, wow. You know, from every debacle, from go back as far as from the Iraq war through to Brexit, through to, you know, the elections, through to recent times with what's been going on with Keir Starmer and all this, it's just been one lie after the next, one false promise after the next. And that evokes poor leadership. Hence why we've had God knows how many prime ministers over how many years. It's like a revolving door. Because of that, because people are going, you know, we don't have faith in what you're saying. You say one thing, you do something else. You know, one rule for you, one rule for us. And so I think the most primary thing, if you're already a leader and you're good at what you do, and let's face it, demand on you to be good at what you do is slowly, slowly becoming easier and easier and easier because of AI. You know, you can become an expert in something that you never even knew very, very quickly. And do you need to action upon it? No. Once agentic AI is in full force, and I think it will all happen within the next 6 months, you'll have lots and lots of things. You know, lots of agents going out and doing half this work for you, doing half the thinking for you. But you still can't lie, because that's an emotive thing. You still have to tell people what's actually going on. You still have to tell people the truth of the matter. You can still fail by being deceitful. You can still fail by not telling people exactly what the situation is. Even though you've got, you know, an accelerated workforce through AI and lots of ability to raise funds and this and that, you can still screw up. And I think that is the most important thing, especially as we move into this, into the world of AI, especially when we start to move into areas where companies as large as Microsoft will happily drop 25, 30,000 employees because it makes fiscal sense for them to do so, and, you know, move to an electronic and an advanced intelligence environment. Of course. But you be honest. Be honest.
And that's such a strong message, Paul. I think you're absolutely right. Trust is the currency of leadership. And people can handle bad news far better than they can handle feeling misled. And when leaders are open and they admit mistakes and communicate early, it builds credibility even in tough times. And I love that you've shared that. So thank you for that, Paul. But when there's denial or that spin, that's what damages confidence long term, doesn't it? And I'm glad that you brought up AI, because AI may make executions faster and expertise more accessible, but it can't replace integrity, because at the end of the day, honesty is still the foundation. Without it, even the most capable leader eventually loses that space in any room they walk into. And I can see now why you've been recognized with the OBE for services to diversity and inclusion, because your words are powerful. So what did that recognition mean to you personally, Paul?
I mean, it's obviously, it's a lovely thing to receive. And I think it's, for me, it's more of a cementing of some of the work that I've done. And to get that recognition, I personally, it meant a lot for me, but I think it meant a lot more for my parents. And, you know, as first generation immigrants themselves, you know, I think it was a nice thing for them. Did it change my life massively? No, it doesn't. It doesn't change your life massively. You still go to work the next day, and you still got to deliver, and you still, you know, you're still only as good as the last thing you did. Does it give you a tad of gravitas? Perhaps. But I don't think it's the be-all or end-all, if you want my honest answers. I don't think it is. But I think it meant a lot more to my mum and dad, and for that, I'm eternally grateful.
Thank you again for being so humble about it, Paul. And I appreciate how balanced you are about it as well. Recognition is meaningful, especially when it reflects years of work. But I love that you don't let it define you, and the fact that it meant so much more to your parents as first generation immigrants. I think that's quite beautiful. So thank you again, Paul. We're going to take another short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Good, good. Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm in conversation with the amazing Paul Sagu, OBE. Now, before the break, we were reflecting on what receiving an OBE meant personally. So you speak often about making businesses both happy and profitable. Why do you believe those two things should go hand in hand?
Well, it's if you don't have both, you don't have a sustainable environment. It's as simple as that. There are many, many, many examples of where people work for successful businesses, are paid an absolute fortune, but can't wait to quit. And we saw a lot of that in the bank during the banking crisis. We saw a lot of that during the banking years, where you'd have where from the moment from when after the banking crisis, you had all these traders who were like not given the flexibility to like do what they want, and then they really had to, you know, buckle down and deliver, and then they realized that they were being paid vast sums of money, but the environment became more and more hostile, more and more difficult. Management became more and more difficult with them. And then what did they end up doing? Quitting, going to something else, changing, becoming entrepreneurs, doing something completely different that they chose, that they decided they loved. So I don't think you can separate the two. You know, some of the best job satisfaction people get is, you say people who like work with muck, you know, people who clean drains, and this, so they have some of the best job satisfaction. They love what they do. They're happy doing what they do. And, you know, they get paid handsomely as well, but they're very, very happy in doing what they do. And I think those two things have always been massively aligned. And in fact, the pinnacle of getting the best out of people is when that alignment is at its peak. That's literally when you are getting the best out of your people, when people love their job. Any good manager, director, CEO, whatever you want to call it, will always say, I don't want an unhappy employee. You know, nobody wants someone who's working for them who's completely unhappy, even though they're being paid bonuses and this, that, the other. Because, you know, time is our asset. Money is just a facilitator. It's not the ultimate asset. Time is your ultimate asset. And legacy is the ultimate asset that you leave behind. But time is what you have, and time is the one thing you have no guarantee of. When you look at your bank balance, you say, oh, I've got X thousands of pounds in my bank. It doesn't change the next day massively, unless, you know, you've got payment that you don't know. Nothing untoward happens 99.9% of the time. But with time, you just don't know.
Yes,
you could be here today, gone tomorrow. You could be here today, gone tonight.
Yes.
You don't know. Time, things can take away from you. So people do value time. They sometimes get their cogs twisted, and they think that money and vanity and these things are more important. And they those things don't last. And the painful reminders of the lessons of making those choices come to them. And they will always come to people, be it at later stage in their life, or at the same time, or, you know, when they're on their deathbed, they will come to them. And I think it's really important that you value the time that you spend, and you enjoy that time you spend. And I don't mean you have to have a laugh every day and not take things seriously. I mean, even when you're working flat out and you're working hard, there's a sense of accomplishment and enjoyment in that.
Yeah, and I really agree with what you're saying about time as well. It's the one asset none of us can replenish. And so creating environments where people feel valued and fulfilled isn't just good leadership in itself, or entrepreneurship or business skills. It's respecting the most precious thing they're giving you, their time. And it's not just in a professional environment, it's in a personal environment as well. And finally, Paul, what message would you most want your listeners to hear about leadership, inclusion, and creating impact that lasts?
If I had to summarize, I would say, you know, if you're a leader, be mindful of how people spend their time, and always check in on the their satisfaction. How satisfied are they? And, you know, yes, you can't always fix the monetary aspect, but we know there are people who do jobs where they're paid a pittance, but they appear every day on time with a smile on their face. We know that that's the case. We know there's many people in societies who are underpaid, undervalued, but they have so much job satisfaction in what they do because they're touching an emotional element of life, or because they're, in fact, you know, giving life or helping sustain life, or they're doing something so magnificent that the impact just outweighs any detriment they have, both financially or on their impact of time or what have you. So we know that that's the case. So that is the primary thing. If you're going to be a good leader, you've got to understand how people are spending their time, you know, that their time is being valued, that they are being valued. And ability and personality is way more important than anything else. When we think about the concept of diversity and inclusion, you know, almost you need to look at everyone as a shade of gray, everyone as a shade of gray, because none of those attributes from race, religion, sexual orientation has got anything to do with the workplace. None of those attributes, the 99.9% of workplaces, let's just caveat that, but none of those attributes, when you hire someone, you hire them for their ability. And none of those attributes come into an ability unless, of course, they're directly related. None of those things are there. So make none of that an importance. It's not important to deliberately do it. It's not important to ignore it. Everybody is welcome. Their abilities shine through. And we see that when you look at tech stocks in America that have hired these amazing Indian CEOs and what have you. And that's not because everyone's gone really an Indian CEO. It's because Indians are very good fiscally and operationally, but they're not very good at ideation. They're not very good at being the person who starts it, which is why all those CEOs, none of them started the company. None of them were involved in the company. Those Indian CEOs, they were all brought in after a period of time, and they all worked their way up the ranks, most importantly through something operational, most importantly through something product-led, or most importantly through something financial. And then they got, you know, into a position where they understood the business because they have that mechanical brain, where they can, the mechanical co-mathematical brain, where they're able to say, well, we know how this works. We know what levers to pull and what not to pull. So, you know, even in that instance, it's not a race thing. It's, they are the best people for the job, you know? And I think that is equally another massive point of leadership, is picking people for the right job, having the respect and time for what they do, and giving them the recognition, you know, giving them the recognition when they do a good job, because that's free. It's free to recognize. It's free to say, well done. It's free to say, I'm proud of you. Great job today. And most importantly, people feel even better about that form of recognition they do when they open their pay packet. So I think those are the basic things. And you know what? They all come under fundamentally being a good human. I mean, yeah. since when you divide that, there is no fine line between being a good human and being a good leader. It's the same person. It's yeah. the same person. You know, you take that same attribute. You don't need to be the tough guy. You don't need to shout at people and scream at people. If you have their respect and they have yours, you can just communicate sensibly. You can tell them the truth. You can tell them what you know. My great belief in companies is, there is no hierarchy. You're just doing different jobs. You're just, everybody's on a single level. The moment you start to instill massive levels of hierarchy, companies start to collapse. Everybody's the same level. You just have a different set of responsibilities. You have a different thing that you're looking after. Take that from being a big tech company to someone who's running a restaurant. The owner's got something different. He's worried about costs coming in and costs coming out. The chef is worried about the food. You know, the waiter is worried about what they're going to serve. Nobody's more important. Nobody is more important. Everybody is replaceable. They're just doing different jobs.
And that's a really thoughtful way to summarize all of our conversation today, Paul. Thank you for ending on that note. I really appreciate the debate of diversity and the structure. The consistent thread is hire for competence, nurture satisfaction, and treat people fairly. And when leaders focus on talent, integrity, and culture rather than labels, that's when organizations become both high-performing and sustainable. So Paul Segou, OBE, thank you so much for joining us today and for sharing your valuable insight and your experience. And to our listeners, leadership is not simply about position, it is about purpose, integrity, and the impact we leave behind. You've been listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and thank you to Paul. Paul, if our listeners want to connect with you, where can they find you?
I mean, I'm at Paul Segou, PaulSagoo, on pretty much everything popular. So LinkedIn, Instagram, etc.
That's wonderful. And we'll leave you today with an uplifting anthem about courage, ambition, and stepping into your potential. A Sky Full of Stars by Coldplay. Until next time, take care of your mind, lead with intention, and stay well. 'Cause you're a sky, 'cause you're a sky full of stars, 'cause you're light.